of that, there's all little market stalls, so you can walk around. It's like they have to put a one-way system in place, so you kind of, it's a bit of a, like you're walking around a queue and then just moving out of the queue to get to the little stalls and get all the, you know, your bits from the stalls. It's all right. A bit too busy for my liking. I like a bit of space, but...
Who doesn't like a bit of space? Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of the... I'm wondering if that was going to fall. That'll be all right there, won't it?
Yeah, it's fine. Over, isn't it?
Lincoln one. Have you been to the Lincoln one?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, you should go to that Christmas market. It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's in the... it's by the cathedral, and it drops down the side through the old kind of bishop's sort of palace dwellings, which are all kind of... A lot of them are, you know, kind of are in ruin now.
Yeah.
You can walk all the way down through it. It's really nice. Okay. And... it's just a nice, I suppose, a little bit like Durham. It's just a nice bit of town at the top. By, you know, Lincoln.
Yeah, been a while since I've been there.
Up the steep, and then you got like, and then on the right hand side as you're going up, you've got the cathedral and the, you know, sort of the main kind of gate to the West End, and then you've got the, and then on the left, you've got the castle, and there's like a square, and it kind of drops down through that. It's just not boozers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to like. It's just like it's. It's the perfect kind of bourgeois experience that I claim I loathe, but in actual fact, we're all hypocrites though, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I was going to talk to you about your work.
Yeah.
Really. And I want to talk to you about hopelessness as well, I think.
Ooh, okay.
You know, and ideas of hopelessness. Is that all right?
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever.
I only realized the other day when I was doing the introduction to the last podcast that I did, that the bit of intro music that I use of yours that you did for me has Alienation in it. It sounds like it has Alienation in it. Do you know what I mean? I went, shit, how did I not notice that before? Do you know what I mean? And then, and it was subconsciously, I think I must have been attracted to it.
Yeah.
I think, you know what I mean? Because that was a little bit more, it was kind of in there and in there and in there and in there. What's the new album? Tell me about the new album then.
Oh, right. Well, it's instrumental. So it's not, the last thing I did got a lot of words in it. This one's more instrumental.
Why?
Because I didn't have any words. I didn't have anything to say verbally. Maybe it's not that I didn't have anything to say verbally. I think... So when I made the previous ones, there's political threads running through them, and that's because I was sick and tired of stuff that's going on, so I just wanted to be able to express something through the medium that I can feel like I'm most freely and openly and easily express myself, I suppose.
Yeah.
But then I'm thinking. There's the whole expectation thing going on of it's political music's what's going to happen here on in the next thing.
Yeah, like,
What's going to be said in the next?
And is that not
album?
Is that not the way that it is in the?
It is, but not as overtly.
Right. Why was it overt in the previous one then?
Because it was trying to just clearly state some ideas and thoughts and opinions, and I just wanted that to be overt, I think.
So it was a kind of a... So is your music then, is that a... Has that... That's a... It's therapy.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the point of departure for it all. Any of that kind of sound-based musical creativity that I do is a... There's a therapeutic element to it, I think.
Always has been.
Hmm. Yes.
Okay.
I think it has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In that moment, though, what drew you to the kind of politics? Then it would have been what year? When would that have come out?
It's a couple of years ago now, when I'd started sort of working on that, where it was I'm doing something that's actually musical, because a lot of my stuff I do isn't, you wouldn't define it as music, because it's more working with sounds, and I suppose you could call it sonic art or organized sound. So it's not based on the music of notes, it's based on the sound and working with sounds and digitally manipulating sounds and recombining them in ways that I think would sound interesting, but it's not, you know, it's not musical. But this was something musical, and I suppose I saw that as a more accessible way of expressing something concrete rather than some sort of abstract sound construct that might not be able to communicate something.
I think that's really interesting, because like one of the criticisms of like my last book is that it's too abstract. And it's too theoretical, that it's too dense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And part of it is that I think I've gone around and I've seen some things that I'm in. If I'm trying to get to the truth of the situation, which is what I'm always trying to do, even though there is no truth, and I accept that, and even though the truth is, the idea of the truth is probably anti-dialectical. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or whatever. It's anti-philosophical. It's it's too empirical. I'm always kind of, I'm interested in sort of following, oh, well, what makes sense to me then? And there's so much going on that I can't make sense of, that I just need to keep reading and reading and reading and citing and writing and reading. Yeah. And therefore, I thread in so many other voices into what I'm doing in order to try and get to what I believe in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think, therefore, it became a little bit abstract.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what I'm doing with this musical thing, because I try to write something musical, again, something that's recognisable as music. But I've done a bit, and then I've moved back into the sort of the abstract space, where I've created abstract collages and soundscapes and so on. But I think, again, I think it's that trying to wrestle with all this stuff that I want to try to communicate, and it feels like that music is the way in which I'm working through those ideas.
But with your sounds-based stuff, is that like you hearing? You'll hear your ears will always be attuned for individual sounds or noises or expressions or whatever it might be. Do you think that's interesting? I'm having that.
Yes,
I can do something with that.
Yeah.
Whereas the process for making the last album, the previous more musical album, that expression of the concrete in a more musical way.
Yeah.
That's a very different process.
Yeah.
Much more painful.
Yeah. It's weird because I can probably from. I think it's about communicating beyond, out to others, because I can in my abstract stuff that I make, it all makes sense to me. I can express things that make sense to myself, but I know there's no way, because this is so abstract, there's no way anybody's going to really make any of the connections that I'm making in those things. So it's very inward looking,
and it's for you.
It's
to give you a sense of sort of. Maintain your own identity, sense of self, sense of self-understanding.
Absolutely, it's almost like a journaling process as well. In that, you know, it's journaled in a different way. It's not written text, but I can go back and I can listen to that, and I can immediately takes me into that headspace that I was in listening to that.
So that last, stuff. But that last Ray Elbow album then was not like that.
No,
very much more of an external focus.
Yeah. It's a weird, I mean, it's a bizarre and frightening experiment, because a lot of the stuff that I do, I think also it's because it's not done for others. It's not, I don't make it overtly accessible to others as well.
Yeah.
And I think that was another dangerous thing about the music and about putting it out there a bit more. Was that it's then exposing my ideas and my thoughts and my inner ideas beyond, and putting it out there, which is, I don't know, there's a part of me that's resistant to that. It's probably a part of me that's resistant to maybe some criticism.
Well, I've got the feedback from a book chapter sitting in my sitting in my email inbox that I can't bear looking at, because, you know what I mean, because I don't want even though I know it's going to be lovely and the person who's commenting is lovely, you know what I mean, and I love working with her and all of that, you know what I mean, I kind of, oh my god, they're going to tear me a new one, it's going to be, I won't be able, my identity won't be able to cope with this.
Absolutely. But then on the other hand, that the contradiction is that I feel like I inhabit a critical space, and I will, you know, I will apply that to everything. So another part of me thinks, well, you've got to be able to give and take.
So you know, on the previous album, on the Human Species album, why is it called The Human Species?
It's called The Human Species because I got to a point where I'm like, it's ridiculous. The human species is just ridiculous. It's completely broken, utterly ridiculous, and so that was the first concept, I suppose, that I started to build things around.
And that's interesting, because there's this kind of wake up thing, which I like a lot, because that kind of that mirrors my kind of, I said I had awakenings as the first chapter in The Alienated Academic, and you've got this indignorance, which I like a lot, deifications in there, egos in there, fragment on machines, march of neoliberals, all of that. So that's kind of, there's a philosophical space that's coming from, right?
Yeah.
What philosophical space? Well, how would you? What are those big ticket items philosophically that were informing that?
Well, there's bits and marks that's coming out of that.
Yeah.
There's the wake up thing is an interesting one as well, because that also features the voices of my kids saying, wake up, daddy. And I thought that was a really powerful thing.
Well, it is with all of the...
thing, you know, particularly given the voice of young people now and how it's been marginalised, and how now there's a movement towards emerging from young people towards, you know, going against that marginalisation. So... So there was that. There's that element, because my kids now are becoming more active. My kids are becoming more politically active.
Kind of climate active and all of that, aren't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely.
You know, intergenerationally active.
So, and I think that was another catalyst for me to. That's another wake up daddy moment, I suppose. In that I'm like, I've got to find a way of encouraging them to keep going with this, to be political creatures. That motivated that. So there's hints at various things. So, you know, fragments on machines hinting at Marx, put my political ideology around neoliberalism. And that wraps in with things like, you know, ignorance and indignation. And so I like to play with words as well. In the titles.
Yeah.
And which kind of, when I'm creating instrumental music, it's difficult to sometimes articulate those. Well, it's articulate complex ideas through instrumental music's very difficult, not next to impossible. Classical music aside, but it still can be difficult. So it's about using the words of the titles to hint at ideas and maybe get some thought processes going that might be carried through with the music, but not necessarily so. So it's a blend of the two, I suppose.
I love that, the kind of playing with because like you use the digit O a lot, don't you? You know, yes. Zero.
So there's not a nihilism as well in sort of runs through this.
But the wordplay is quite interesting, isn't it? Because I love it when you kind of, you know, you get that, oh, actually that word is if I unpack it, is also that. You know, and you sort of think, oh shit, why hadn't I seen that? But I love the ability to play with that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I think in part I kind of was thinking about the philosophical thing, because I remember a conversation in the corridor when you told me to read some more. Who was it telling me to read?
Was it Schopenhauer?
Yeah. Back in the day, you know, you're too Marxist, Richard, go and read some. And then I read some Hegel, you know, and now my brain's melted. So one of the things that I struggle with is, because like I feel it with my nephews and niece, you know, and you sort of struggle with it a little bit in terms of, I'm always thinking, oh my God, am I doing enough? Or just do I just write about how broken the world is? Or do I do it, you know, am I doing enough? Am I just leaving it on the page and then expecting the kids to do it? You know what I mean? Or am I, you know, I'm not saying you're doing that with your music, but do you ever consider that position that the limit of my critical engagement is classically bourgeois. It's not on the streets, it's not in the factory, it's not whatever.
Absolutely. And that's one of the fears I had about when I started to make stuff that had a political edge. And that's the fears I had that it has a particular left political leaning, and that I'm not active enough in that space. Or I don't feel that I am active enough in that space. So again, that's again a danger and a fear of getting that criticism. Although I'm aware that, and I would probably, you know, I'd understand that criticism, because I don't know where the threshold is for, are you active enough or not?
That's
for others to judge, I suppose. Can't, you know.
Yeah, I think in part I was kind of piqued a little bit by Mike Neary in his latest book on Students Producer, How Do Revolutionary Teachers Teach. And Mike's like a really big influence, you know. So, and I really value him. And he's got this line, I forget what, but it's really early on, he's got this line effectively about this swathe of people who have written in and around critical university studies, but really, and so we've critiqued the neoliberal university to death, but haven't really done anything to kind of affect any change in that space, you know. And I thought, and it really got me, and after I'd come down from feeling piqued about it, you know what I mean, because he'd cited me in that kind of space, you know what I mean, I kind of thought oh, that's really interesting actually. A why do I feel piqued by it, you know, and you know, let that one go. That's an issue between me and my therapist, right? But then after that, then you start to think, oh, it's that point you just exactly made about like what does activism consist of then, and what does being active enough consist of, you know, is it in relation to the kind of trade union at work? Yeah. Is it in relation to being a true and necessary and kind enough person in your relationships? Is it about working on yourself in order that you can do that? Is it about being on the streets? Is it about taking cakes to picket lines even though you're not on, you know, on strike? Is it about working in social centres? Is it about working in homeless centres? Is it about being, is it not enough to do that work in political society, you know, on the governing body of that school?
Yeah.
Is it got to be in civil society? Have you got to be working, you know, have you got to be working against, you know, some Althusserian ideological state apparatus? What have you, you know, what does enough look like? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When your old man is tired, like me. So I think it's a really interesting one then, because one of the things that I'm interested in is that sense of, well, is the work that we're doing on the page or the score and the mixing desk and all of that, is that part of it?
It's about doing something. To me, it's about, there's an economy of scale at work, isn't there, in a sense, that there are those who can use the word or the image or the sound or the whatever to amplify something. So, and that amplification then hits others, and then that they then become active based on that, and so on. So I think part of me is like, you know what, I feel like I'm doing enough, and that's the best contribution that I can make right now, is doing that thing, and I can see where that has the potential to amplify and to engage and to do something potentially. So I think, at least that's what I tell myself to feel better about the idea that maybe I'm not doing enough.
Yeah, but there's a constant questioning, isn't there, of your own position.
Yeah.
Part of it's that, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's probably why I make and do the stuff that I do, because I think that's a self-reflective process.
Yeah.
When I'm making stuff, a lot of the stuff is, it's, you know, it's my inner self being turned into some other physical representation, sound-based representation, whatever that is. So I think it's for me, it's a very sort of self-reflective process of creating that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And I think sometimes it's like I can only begin to plot a way forward. Who am I to plot the way forward, right?
Yeah.
And I don't believe in utopias anyway. I believe in ongoing conversations that might lead us somewhere different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These ideas of solutions are just like are anathema to me. I don't understand them, believe them, want them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Part of it is I don't trust the world enough. You're telling me that's a solution? You've got an agenda.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not having it. I'm a bit like the Joker. You're just sort of thinking, let's just pull it all down. Do you know what I mean? It's all fucked. Let's pull it all down.
Yeah, no, it's weird again,
I'm not saying I'm nihilistic in that way, because you know what I mean? Otherwise, I wouldn't do all the voluntary stuff and all that kind of thing. But at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's that contradiction that's running through. I have a deep seated cynicism as well that I find sometimes hard to deal with, because it does push you towards that whole.
Someone called me a cynic.
Nihilistic.
Last week. Finding. It's interesting, isn't it? The whole concept. I've been called cynical twice in the last kind of couple of years, and. In both cases, I think the person was wrong. You know, when you just try and provide an honest critique, because you're honest about your own position, and it's not necessarily cynical. It's a kind of, I'm not cynical about this. This is kind of the scales have fallen from eyes, and this is how I see, in my case, kind of the crisis of mental health in higher education. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not cynical about the university. This is the university. It is a cynical space.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think also the nature of criticism is changing. I think it's becoming sharper because it's having to become sharper.
Yeah.
You know, the blade is having to slice deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yeah.
So, I think criticism is shift. Is not going to be cynicism, but it's shifting in that direction more and more. It's a lot more sharper, I think.
Do you think that's because, like, I was going to ask about hopelessness. Is that because situations feel hopeless, do you think?
Yes. Truth has disappeared somewhere. Truth has, you know, hidden away, because it seems to have become this nebulous thing now that it's really difficult to identify what the most likely truth or most likely reality is.
So
I think there's this trying to sort of slice everything wide open to try and reveal that, so it's becoming a lot harsher.
So we become more kind of cynical about it from whatever position we're in.
Yeah,
that we don't believe, or we can't have our words don't cut through. We can't be heard. Well, we don't believe what we hear, or we can't be heard in the space that we're in. I think it's an interesting one. I kind of deliberately. Well, obviously, I'm writing about hopelessness, so that's why I'm kind of interested in it. I don't believe the university in inverted commas in its current configuration, and obviously that's a social configuration, right?
Yep.
has any answers for us to the big ticket issues of the day. You know what I mean? It has its truths that are based on certain voices, you know, and you can't get through. I struggle with whether that offers us any way out of anything other than a kind of a collapse into cynicism or nihilism. Or barbarism.
Well, I think we just need to get close. We need to get closer to that boundary. It's difficult. It's a tightrope to walk, isn't it? Because you fall over the other side, and then
you're gone.
You can't change anything then, because you've given up at that sense.
I think in that way, actually, one of the ways in which we get close to that boundary, that's really interesting. One of the ways for me in which we get close to that boundary are actual concrete stories. You know what I mean? People's actual lived and then believing those lived experiences.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know what I mean? I believe you, I hear you, I believe you.
Yeah.
There's been a great one on Twitter about, is it hashtag Hallam Horror, about like stories from the front line at Sheffield Hallam?
I was going to mention that, you know, all the strike action now, and you're hearing a lot of human stories from that, and you're seeing a lot of human solidarity, you know, and again, social media is amplifying that. And again, it seems like there's been a reinvigoration of that process, of the process of, you know, action through solidarity, strike action, etc. So again, again, it's shifted in that direction towards the boundaries of taking more action and being more vociferous and being more active about it all.
And I think that activity is more human. When you were sort of talking about that, I was thinking about that kind of duality between kind of hope and hopelessness. You hear quite a lot of people sort of talking about narratives of hope and the hopeful university and all this, which I loathe. I hate it in my core. You know what I mean? Without its kind of opposite. I'm not saying there's some kind of crazy Cartesian duality here, you know what I mean? There's an interplay, isn't there? But, you know, the fact that the idea is that it's symbolically hopeful in a world that is just destroying us is just, like, insane to me. I think that's why I think that those kind of narratives, individual narratives, are so important, really, you know, to understand them and sit with them in a humane way. You sit with them in a humane way.
Yeah, well, I think that the idea of hopelessness, I think, because I think there is a within all of us, I feel like there's a elements of our lived experience that connects to our own sense of hopelessness in ourselves and our place in space in the universe. So I think that sense of hopelessness, not the hopelessness that you're referring to, that sense of the hopelessness, not abject nihilism and what's the point.
Yeah.
I think that's within all of us, I think. And I think it's about, again, it's about, and you can humanize that connection, and then you get that, you then be able to get people to voice their own sense of hopelessness within themselves, which I think the work that you do, that's what it, you know, it can lead towards, to getting that.
Yeah, I think that's important, because then I kind of think, your ability, I think, to kind of process it beyond depression, you know what I mean? Because you've got to sit with it for a bit, haven't you? And you've got to process it without it becoming just a depressed position.
It's dangerous to visit that
escape
those
from
thoughts as well.
Yeah, you know? But I think you have to be so. You know, I think if there's a sense in which you individually or collectively can sit with it in order to find and process it, which I think is the purpose for me in terms of writing. So is that the purpose for you in terms of? I'm wondering about that being the purpose for you in terms of processing it digitally and audio, in terms of audio and in terms of the digital and digital media and soundscapes, or an actual musical album.
Yeah.
Rob nods.
Sorry.
It's all right. I wonder about the process of processing your hopelessness, or processing whatever the feel. I'm not saying you feel hopeless when you're writing, right? Because that's, I'm not trying to drive it around that, but that you're trying to process something in your music, aren't you? Or in the soundscapes, you're processing something.
Yeah. Oh, and it absolutely is,
in that therapy way.
Yes, absolutely. And so it is emerging from a sense of hopelessness, because it's a sense of things that I experience that the universe is placing on my shoulders that generates the sense of hopelessness. There seems such, they're not simple solutions, but there seems just this series of steps and things that could happen that actually would appear that would take away a lot of that hopelessness. And it doesn't seem like it's a real big challenge for the human species to achieve those particular things, and the things that are in the way of that, one of them, the largest one of them being capitalism, seems to be something that is a small thing in the greater, bigger sort of scheme of things, in a way. So
it's a big thing, though, isn't it, to address it?
Well, it is, yeah.
You know, so much power and privilege and status and trans-historical you know, about it. I think in part that's why I like, in part, because like the thing that I'm going to write is called, is the end, it is kind of intellectual work at the end of history. Yeah. You know, and the idea that we were told that capitalism, there's no alternative, right? The wall comes down in 89 or 90 or whenever it was, 89, and then it's an ever-expanding, you know, it's endogenous, it's growth, it's whatever. And then, and now all of a sudden we realise 12 years on from the financial crash, we're in the middle of kind of anthropocentric kind of climate change, we've got kids who are fighting for intergenerational justice, history's back on the agenda, politics is back on the agenda, you know. So I'm wondering whether, like, I mean, certainly I see my work in relation to that. History's back.
Yeah.
How do I process it? How do I make sense of it? This isn't just trying to deal with, oh, can I get the better job so I can get the better house so I can buy more chickens or whatever it is, you know. Yeah. No, it's shit. How the hell am I going to keep this job in order to pay my mortgage down whilst at the same time I'm trying to fight for climate justice or think about the impact of austerity on these kids who can't afford to eat or whatever it might be. And actually, there's a different set of relationships to the world, to each other. I don't know how that affects your music, though. That was just me ranting.
Well, no, I mean, all of that, that's where this particular creative kick that I'm on at the minute, that's what it emerged from. It emerged from all that idea, and that if those issues around, describes this sense of sort of hopelessness with everything.
Well,
you know.
Well, so how's the new thing then, which is called?
The new one is called, I'm trying to move away from some political stuff, but the new one's called All a Bit Lost.
And the kind of the threads running through it, not necessarily the titles, but the kind of the philosophical or personal or emotional.
It's a sense of lost, I suppose. It's the sense of being lost in that melee of where can I go, what can I do, will doing that make any difference whatsoever?
And is that sort of interconnected for you then? So is it, it's like home, society, work, family, whatever, you know what I mean? How do I do all the things I need to do in spite of and against and through all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, it reflects my own sense of being lost in that melee, but I think it's also trying to reflect that back on, I think we're all a bit lost, we all are having trouble finding a way.
I think for me the lost thing's quite important, because there's a sense of loss. I'm lost because I kind of feel like the only, and actually my anchor point is really is me, you know, sort of 6 months out of therapy and all that jazz, and actually just sort of having a sense of Weltschmerz or whatever, you know what I mean, or existential sort of on, you know, sort of sense of kind of understanding that I only have limited power, and I can, the things that I can control are my relationships with other people, the amount of energy that I can put in order to keep myself safe and sane, the work I can do with the union or as an independent visitor or in a, you know, as a member of a governing body, with my friends, with my family, caring for my nan, all that kind of stuff. And it's just kind of, I got a sense of what I can do in that space, knowing that it's incredibly limited on the face of this planet. You know what I mean? I can't afford to tear myself to pieces over it. But at the same time, there's a huge sense of loss, A, about my lack of superman kind of status, but also about the fact that, you know, other people don't agree with me, other people aren't in the same position, other people have got their heads in the sand, or other people can't see, or other people don't want to see, or other people don't have the resources to enable them to see, and that might be that actually they're just trying to fight to put food on the table, let alone think about other bourgeois concerns. So part of it for me is, and there's a sense of loss around that, and also a sense of loss around kind of, oh fuck, what kind of world is it that we're building here? And in part because, and it's the same with me when I think about the university, because I sort of think I'm not going to fetishize it as some kind of utopian thing from you know, from the 50s or 60s or 70s or pre 2008 or whatever, you know what I mean? But you do have this sort of sense of, oh God, I remember the relationships that we had and the ways in which we worked and the kind of the enhancement agendas and the things we tried to do. And we were still being performance managed, and we were on a trajectory, you know, that then got squeezed and amplified after Brown and all of that kind of stuff. And now I look at where we are and I think, oh my God. And there's perhaps a sense of loss for the symbolic.
Not for
kind of what it really is, but for the kind of the symbolic. Oh, what, look at, back to what you were saying before, look at what we could have made. Look at what we could have done.
Yeah.
And now look at where we are.
Yeah.
Look at this toxic.
I think that's it. I think that's the sort of, that's where I'm coming at it from. It just seems like there were much better choices that could have been made, and we'd have found ourselves in a better place than we're at now. And it feels like we're in a place where it's almost running away and beyond control, you know, we've lost the reins in a way. And so what do you do in that? And we're back in a sort of a hopeless space in that sense, that you're trying to grab a hold of the reins as it just races away, completely out of your control. You're completely then lost within this runaway thing, whatever it, you know, it ultimately is.
Do you have a feeling about the role of like education in all of that? The place of education in all of that?
I think it's absolutely fundamental. I think critical approaches is happening, but it's happening within a very controlled environment that's not allowing a broader critique of things that might, you know, have a bigger influence and impact on stuff that's happening in this space.
Because I don't see that. I think that's right, and I don't see the, you know, the metrics of markets, the mediations, all of those things are, and they're social. So I kind of can't. So I think even more so, I kind of, you know, that idea of the university as a separate space from that kind of broader social fabric inside which it's embedded, you know, and that's why I'm kind of always pushing to see it kind of dissolved into a new form of society, really, you know. And that's why I'm interested, I think, in that kind of, you know, because there's that move beyond critical university studies and decolonizing into kind of the abolition of the university, you know, and that abolition thing is a really interesting thing to kind of explore, you know, and therefore to think about the abolition of the university at the level of society. So, I mean, that's one of the things that I take from your music is it's at a societal level.
Absolutely.
and you would take the kind of the institutions in which you're embedded, which are many, you would kind of reflect on them at the level of kind of society and social relations, really.
Yeah. Well, that's again this idea of it's getting close to those boundaries of it's of just abolishing it all in a sense and like a reboot, but
away from kind of cynicism.
You know what I mean, and that's that fine line. And it's just how do you tread it without going nuts? Yes, and that's I think that's the space that I want to make my music. I'm in that sort of.
Yeah.
If we go too far this way, and you just realise, this is just it's an unworkable, nihilistic space where you know. But too far the other way, and it's the same old. You're just regurgitating this. The machine's got you on the other side of
in
that.
I've been reading quite a lot about the communisation thesis. And there's this whole sense of, you know, do you push for full communisation now, or what's the role of transitional demands, you know, dictatorship of proletariat, role of the state, dissolve the state, what does Marx say in the Gotha program about being a lower form of communism and a higher form and all of that kind of stuff, and the fact that psychologically trying to move to full communism now by this afternoon seems to me to be a recipe for barbarism or civil war, and yet it's kind of what we need, because without it we ain't got time to piss about with transitional demands, right?
Sure.
But we're going to have them, but how do you square that circle then? I'm going to find that very difficult in, because people want solutions when you're writing or you're making or whatever, don't they? You know what I mean? But maybe they're right. Maybe they're just a presentation of what is.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with the lost control of the reins metaphor, because I mean, you if you could slow it down, you could slow it down a little bit. There might be space for you to sort of not have to be so radical in order to stop it running away.
You know what I mean?
But I think it feels like we've lost control of the reins, and it just needs something that's an opposite of its acceleration away from out of our control. We need something in the opposite direction, just to either somehow sever it and let it run away by itself, and we're no longer involved in it, or some way of halting its incessant sort of progress.
Incessant, inevitable. Yeah, God.
But again, it's that fine line, and that's what I kind of struggling through with my music in that sense. The current album I'm working on, you know, All a Bit Lost, is that feeling like, well, it's entered almost utter hopelessness in that it has just lost its galloped away.
I think when you were speaking, I was reminded. I just looked up a note. I've got some notes on my phone. You know, when you're out on the bus or whatever. You know what I mean? And something. And irresponsible optimism. That was when you were speaking. That was what was coming into my head, and I couldn't. I had to just go and double check my words. So that kind of I am not interested. That kind of idea of progress is irresponsible. At best, it's irresponsible optimism, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why I like the hopeless position, because it's anti that.
Yeah.
So the new album then, that's going to be out when?
Soon, I hope. Yeah.
I like just, that. Whenever. Yeah. But the tracks are pretty much
the tracks. Yeah, the tracks are there. All done. Yeah. It's just tweaking some of the titles. Because this is, because it's a bit more, I've got to get the titles right, because I think the titles will say something.
It's interesting. So it's not about the content, it's about, it's about the title. I get a bit,
it's where I get a bit sort of.
Is it because you don't want to release it into the wild, or is it because, or is it genuinely because, like, it's got the whole thing needs to be packaged in a way that makes you feel, you know, that, no, that's the best I could do. Or do you not want to release it? Do you know what I mean? Is there something stopping you?
I'm not bothered about it being the best that I can do. I've never had a problem. I've never had a sort of an issue with that. I'll make something and I'll just put it out there, because that's you could spend an eternity trying to get something to be absolutely right. You can always. Critical person at heart, so you can always find something wrong with it, and you can get and I have done in the past. I've got into this cycle of going round and round in circles. You know, you start with something, think, oh, it's done, and then you're like, oh, but if I change that, and then you change it, and then you find out you're changing something else, and it's like this ongoing. That change that you did actually made the original thing. So then you make another change, and that then change it into something. Before you know it, you've kind of. It's morphed into something completely different, and you're like, "Oh no, that's not what it wants." And then you sort of backtrack, and you end up where you started. So,
yeah.
And I've been burned in that way a couple of times. So I try to not spend too much time in trying to make something absolutely perfect, because you can find yourself.
You just got to be ready.
Yeah, it just you get to a point where that's fine, that done.
Yeah, and it's good enough.
Let's move on to the next thing. So yeah, I think the titles thing is because the musical part of it is not overtly communicating anything musically.
Okay, so it's important.
And so it's important that I could just call it A B C D E F G if I wanted to, I suppose.
Yeah, but you want something more.
There's a thread going through these albums that I want to.
Yeah.
Maintain a little bit.
Yeah,
it is coming from a place where I'm trying to say something.
Yeah,
but sometimes the music, I'm like, well, it doesn't really. I listen to it and think, well, it's not really saying anything. Well, it just sounds like a bit of a groovy little jazz thing.
Yeah,
what is that saying other than groovy little jazz thing? You know what I mean? Yeah, so, then putting a title on it, you're like, well, that title.
Maybe it's just a title
to try and say something that's completely irrelevant to the music.
Yeah,
that's what I'm fighting with right now. I think that's probably one of the reasons why I've not put it out there yet.
Okay,
because I'm a bit. Is it a vehicle just for a bunch of titles, song titles?
Yeah,
that's articulating an idea rather than just some music that's nice to listen to and has got no idea behind. You know,
but you made it nice to listen to for a purpose, didn't you? And a reason, I guess. You made it in that way.
Yeah.
With and the content is your content that's coming from somewhere. So, right, I'm gonna leave it at that. I think, is that all right?
That's great. Yeah.
I'll put some nonsense in the sleeve notes about where we can find all your lovely stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Turn that off. I'll send it to you before I put it out.
That's fine.
I wonder how we stop this.
Detritus ejaculates.